Welcome to The Inquiry on the BBC World Service with me, David Baker. Each week, one question, four expert witnesses, and an answer. Feel underneath your laptop after you've been using it for a while. Chances are it's warm. That's heat produced by the thousands of calculations that your laptop is doing to keep that spreadsheet up to date, display your emails, and yes, listen to this programme on the BBC World Service. And even though there are pretty much no moving parts in a modern laptop, all that activity needs energy, which is why your battery seems to drain so quickly when you've been hard at work. Now imagine a network of millions of computers around the world, all connected and working together to produce not spreadsheets, but artificial intelligence algorithms that could help stop global warming, do the jobs we humans hate to do, and even develop medicines that could cure everyone of cancer. How much power would we need to operate that? Not to mention to run the massive cooling systems that we'd need to stop it overheating. So for the inquiry this week, we're asking, will we have enough energy to power AI?
Part 1. AI changing the world.
Artificial intelligence is the name we give to super advanced computer programs that can do much more than what we're used to using computers for. They can process huge amounts of data and work out ways to do things that are far beyond the capability of the human brain. And they're already delivering amazing breakthroughs. Our first witness is Mark van Rijmenem, a strategic futurist based in Sydney, Australia, who researches the effect emerging technologies are having on the world.
There are numerous ways how we already benefit from AI right now. A clear use case is healthcare. Google launched MetGemini, which is a sort of a ChatGPT for the healthcare industry, which would allow doctors to have sort of an assistant to look over their shoulders when they make analysis of what's wrong with the patient. At the same time, we see AI being developed, such as DeepMind AlphaFold, which is able to predict how proteins fold. And that is very, very useful to create personalized medication, where we are able to move healthcare from a passive, reactive healthcare system to a preventative, proactive healthcare system. So there are a lot of benefits where we can use AI to create new solutions for the problems we face today already.
DeepMind's AlphaFold is an artificial intelligence program and a great example of the astonishing benefits we can look forward to from the growth of AI. One doctor we spoke to researching this program compared it to Newton discovering gravity. An AI may also be able to help us solve the biggest problem facing the world right now, global warming.
There are ways where we can see AI already helping today to fight climate change. We have now also availability of tools to predict where disasters will strike. And to a much higher degree of certainty, we can now predict weather events almost to the meter and the second, which helps us prepare for if a disaster is striking due to climate change, we can better prepare and warn citizens how to go about that. So there I already see quite a lot of examples of how the AI today can help combat climate change. Now, if we fast forward a little bit further, then we see the integration of quantum computers. And quantum computers together with AI will help us solve the really, really big problems when it comes to fighting climate change.
And beyond that, Mark says, is the possibility of what's known as artificial superintelligence, something that could transform the lives of everyone on the planet.
This is basically intelligence which is as intelligent or vastly more intelligent than the entire human species. And this is where things become scary as well as very, very interesting, because now we have a technology that we as humans can no longer understand, but also will offer solutions to sort of the world's biggest problems we have. AI is already coming up and helping us finding breakthroughs for nuclear fusion or improving solar panels. Now, if you look a lot further in the future when we have artificial superintelligence, the AI might come up with finding ways to extract energy from thin air. And that sounds very much like science fiction, but who knows? You know, if we have an intelligent being that is infinitely more intelligent than human species, anything is possible. if we achieve artificial superintelligence, then I think there will lie an age of abundance in front of us, where, you know, we have technology that's vastly outperforms humanity from an intelligence perspective, and all our problems in the world will be resolved by this intelligence.
Part 2. AI's need for power.
AI is really all around us, doing things like detecting your face to unlock your phone, through to making predictions on your email to filter your spam, all the way through to large language models that will attempt to help you do your homework or write your next set of work documents. So it's really something that has become part of the infrastructure of everyday life.
AI's presence in our lives is going to give us a very bright future indeed. The challenge, though, is that the computers that run AI algorithms already use huge amounts of power. One estimate is that by 2027, AI could be using the same amount of electricity per year as a country the size of Netherlands. Our second witness is Kate Crawford, a professor at the University of Southern California in Los Angeles, who researches the physical effects the growth of AI is having on the planet.
The common story is that it's a very immaterial set of mathematical calculations, just so many algorithms in the cloud, if you will. In fact, it's an enormous material infrastructure that's really planetary in scale. And certainly what we've seen in the last 2 to 3 years is an enormous increase in this sort of material footprint of artificial intelligence through strings of large-scale data centers like large-scale warehouses. Without windows, and inside them you have these gigantic computational stacks.
There are something like between 9,000 and 12,000 of those data centers around the world. And in many of them are those computational stacks that Kate mentioned. These do all the calculations that AI involves, and they're full of what are called GPUs, superpowered computer processors that are especially good at running AI algorithms. And just like our laptops, they give off heat.
Data centers are quite commonly placed by a river or near a water source in order to actually cool down the very heat-intensive processes, the GPUs that are inside them.
And all of that needs power, both to run those processing chips and to pump the water that keeps them cool. A lot of power.
Depending which estimate you believe, AI is already using somewhere between 8 to 10% of the world's electricity budget. I mean, that's just enormous if we think about it as, you know, the amount of energy being used here.
And that's only going to increase as we keep on developing what's called generative AI, the kind of AI that can chat with us online or which can create images or even write music from prompts we feed into it. At the 2024 Davos World Economic Forum, Sam Altman, CEO of OpenAI, the company behind ChatGPT, said that new AI models will use far more energy than we previously thought. And Kate agrees.
AI is headed for an energy crisis. Generative AI systems consume vastly more power than expected. All of that energy is coming from our existing grid, and our sort of current grids are struggling to cope. There's no way to resolve this without a breakthrough in terms of how we are generating energy.
Ideally, of course, the energy we generate to run those AI data centers will come from renewables. We're already facing a big climate crisis without AI putting more carbon into the atmosphere. But that may not be possible in the short term.
There has been an increasing focus on how can we use alternative energy sources, renewable energy, such as solar, such as thermal energy. But in actual fact, we simply aren't increasing the amount of renewable sources into the grid to meet the increasing demands that are particularly coming from the technology sector.
So what's filling that gap at the moment?
It's really been a return to traditional non-renewable sources like coal and, of course, nuclear, which has now been the focus, particularly in the tech sector. There's even talk of seeing nuclear reactors sitting alongside data centers in order to power them. My hope is that the AI industry will start to think about sustainability in a much deeper way. We don't have sustainable AI practices at the moment. We've actually got the opposite. We've seen a push to greater scale towards these sort of monstrously large AI infrastructures and models. And that has come with this increase in energy demand, which comes along with an increased demand for the water to cool that infrastructure. But we are also seeing that these infrastructures require enormous amounts of essentially minerals that are in high demand, from lithium to rare earth. So you're seeing a whole range of environmental impacts at a time when already suffering from extraordinary climate instability. So in this sense, AI is actually contributing to these problems at a time when we really have to be thinking much more carefully about our water and energy use.
Part 3. The Energy Matrix.
Electricity is really a powerful source for standard of living. And so as the standard of living across the world rises, particularly in less developed countries, the demand for electricity is really increasing.
Our third witness is Sam Young, the AI manager at Energy Systems Catapult, a UK-based consultancy that's working towards a net zero future. He says it's not just AI that's going to be using more and more energy. It's all of us as we enjoy a higher standard of living.
So we see in Southeast Asia, lots more demand for electricity because lots more people want air conditioning. Everyone's having to build more and more and more power capacity and transmission capacity to cope with that.
We should be able to meet that demand. We're already using 3 times more electricity than we were in the 1980s. And for the most part, it feels like we're managing. In theory, we could generate enough electricity to meet all the planet's energy demands. In practice, though, the business of generating power and getting it to where we need it is a lot more complex.
There's a few important things to realise when you're thinking about producing energy. The first is that you need to produce the energy and transmit it. And the further you transmit it, the more it kind of leaks out of the wires. So you don't want to be transmitting it all the way around the world. There'll be a lot wasted. But also you need to produce it at exactly the right time that you need to use it. Some forms of energy generation, like coal or oil or nuclear, you can turn on and off when you like. But other forms of generation, often the renewables, like wind and solar, the wind is either blowing or it isn't. The sun is either shining or it isn't. And so it's the where you're trying to use it and when you're trying to use it are really important.
The issue is that the generation of power is not equal around the world.
There is no such thing as the global power grid. Each country generally has their own power grid. And in some places in the world, like Europe, all of those national power grids are really connected together. And so electricity that's generated in Sweden by hydropower can be sent along wires all the way down to Italy, for example. But in other parts of the world, you don't have the same connections and the country just has its own power grid. And in some parts of the world, you don't even have a reliable power grid at all. It exists, but it won't cover the whole country, or it exists, but it won't always be providing the reliable power that people need.
And just as people in Southeast Asia need more electricity to run air conditioning systems, the more the world uses AI, the more energy it needs.
There's 2 reasons we're going to need more energy for AI. The first is that some of the bigger AI models are going to get bigger and bigger and bigger and need more energy to train and to run. But the second, and probably actually the more important one, is that we are likely to use AI models more and more and more, and therefore the total amount of energy we need for them is going to increase.
And that could lead to bottlenecks. In some countries, data centres are already using a big chunk of the electricity that's available.
And so a really great example is in Ireland. About 30% of the whole country's electricity supply is used for data centres. And that's massive and means you can't use the electricity for something else.
And even if a country's electricity grid can cope now, can it cope in the future?
It might increase by 50% in the next 5 years and might double over longer timeframes. So a significant increase over where we are today. It's important to remember two things, though. One is that the energy for data centers isn't just driven by AI. It's also driven by you wanting to stream video or load websites and store your data on the cloud. So that is driving a lot of the growth.
Sam sees an opportunity here, though. That extra demand could create an opening for new countries to enter the energy market.
Countries where there's lots of opportunity for renewables, so where there's lots of wind, lots of opportunity for solar, they have great potential to expand their clean energy production.
And many of those countries will be in Africa.
There is an opportunity for countries in sub-Saharan Africa to generate their own electricity to use renewables. The real challenge that they face is the investment in infrastructure and the investment in transmission, and how do we actually unlock that so that they have access to cheap, clean electricity.
Part 4. Africa Rising.
It may sound paradoxical, but one way countries in Africa could deliver more electricity to their own citizens would be to attract some of those energy-hungry data centres to the continent. Our fourth witness is Rose Mutiso, Research Director of the Energy for Growth Hub, a think tank that's focused on solving global energy poverty.
Africa accounts for less than 1% of global data centre capacity, and actually the total number of data centres in Africa is roughly equivalent to the total number in Mumbai, so one city in India, so very much lagging on the global scale. So very big concentration in South Africa. And South Africa is also where the really big, major, what we call hyperscalers, so this is Amazon Web Services, Microsoft, Google, they have really large data center footprint in South Africa and nowhere else really in Africa. We do have other centers of data center capacity are in countries like Nigeria, Kenya, some North African countries, just basically correlates to where there's the more productive economies in Africa, where there's quite a lot of local demand. So people using the internet, enterprises using the internet, which then creates demand for these data centers.
And building more data centers, she says, could bring about big improvements in a country's electricity infrastructure.
Part of my work is to try and see the opportunity. So you can actually use these electricity-hungry data centers to act as an anchor customer for utilities. So now utilities have a customer that uses a lot of electricity, drives revenues, and then improves the quality of power for the entire network. And so the dynamic is quite interesting for poor countries that are energy scarce, that the power requirements of AI and digital infrastructure can be less of a threat and more of an opportunity to actually build out this infrastructure and start plugging these energy access gaps.
And even better, bearing in mind what our first two witnesses have said about the environmental costs of AI, the energy that many African countries can offer is green.
On the African continent, there's quite a lot of renewable potential, whether that's solar energy or wind power. In Eastern Africa, like in Kenya and Horn of Africa, we have a lot of geothermal power. And so a lot of digital companies have set for themselves pretty stringent carbon targets. And so they're hungry for clean energy, and there's a massive clean energy opportunity in Africa. So you could really connect these two dots together. And we're seeing this already. A country like Kenya is actively trying to pitch itself as a destination for data center companies.
And it's not only the big US-based tech giants that are getting in on the action.
And one thing that is quite interesting about the African data center markets is that there are quite a lot of African companies that are at the forefront of this build out. So it's not just the big global multinationals. It's a mix of different players that are trying to get a piece of this pie.
As well as boosting investment in energy, more data centres in the continent, she says, will benefit the online life of the people who live there.
For a lot of African users, when you log onto your Google inbox or you turn on your Netflix, you're downloading data from a server, a physical server that is most likely not on the African continent. It's somewhere in a different geography entirely. And the farther you are from a local data center that's housing your content, the slower it is. Some users will be familiar with the dial that tells you loading, 8%, 10%, oh, back to 4%. Oh, wait, I'm waiting for my video to load. It's taking forever. If I'm in Kenya and my local device is sending a request all the way to Canada or Europe or whatever, wherever the Netflix server that contains my movie is, and then sending it back. It's quite inefficient. It's more expensive.
And having more local data centers will benefit businesses too.
These days, to be a modern business, you're dealing with a lot of data, a lot of digital operations. You probably need to take advantage of cloud services to store your data or to access some digital services. And so as these digitally connected companies expand, they just need this local capacity. It's actually quite a big dividend to have these local data centers. Obviously, if you have more productive businesses that are taking advantage of these technological tools, they create more jobs, there are more opportunities. So there are all of these downstream overflow effects. This is always a big trade-off, is meeting the challenge of energy scarcity and energy poverty while investing in these productive centers, right? I think for many African countries, while trying to debate this balance of diverting infrastructure dollars, infrastructure investments into these new sectors, I think what is really, really important in that balance are two things. One is, everywhere in Africa, there's extreme energy poverty. So these are households that just have no power. So that kind of extreme energy poverty is a social imperative. And so we need to address that.
So to come back to our question, will we have enough energy to power AI? Well, in the short term, it looks like we will. And as we've heard, there's a big opportunity here for Africa to be part of the solution. Our main challenge, though, is to make sure that as much as possible of the electricity AI data centers use comes from renewables. But looking further ahead, as data centers get even more energy hungry, we may have to limit what they do and how we use them, at least in the short term. And maybe that's the lesson here. It uses power to log on to ChatGPT and ask it for recipe suggestions. It takes even more power to use AI to produce funny pictures or folk songs in the style of Taylor Swift. And that's power that could be used for something else. Or even better, considering how much electricity we still produce from carbon-heavy fuels, not at all. There's no doubt that AI will produce incredible breakthroughs for the planet and for all of us living here. But that's some way off in the future. And in the meantime, we're facing a climate crisis. Perhaps our own human version of superintelligence will be to learn to use the power we do have more wisely. A final word from our first witness, strategic futurist Mark van Rijmenen.
We're not going to stop the development of AI. So we'll have to find novel ways. And if there's not enough sustainable energy, then I'm afraid we'll have to resort to other means. But I'm not worried that there won't be enough energy. There will be, because it's too important to stop this, if we ever could.
The inquiry from the BBC World Service was presented by David Baker. It was produced by Louise Clark, researched by Katie Morgan. The editor is Tara McDermott. And it was mixed by Craig Boardman.